Welcome, welcome. This is Juma, and this is Leaf Style, where education, culture, and cannabis collide. We have a great show today. I want to welcome my co-host, Dr. Safia Lin, a medical cannabis and emergency medical physician, and the founder of Ask Dr. Lin. Welcome, Doc. How are you doing?
I am great. Thank you so much, Juma. Juma is amazing, our resident attorney, sociologist, and all-around global citizen. Such a pleasure to be on this platform with both of you today. We want to welcome our guest, Jane West, to the platform. Welcome to Leaf Style. Jane West is the CEO of Jane West, the founder of Women Grow, and owner of Edible Events Company. Like, that's enough in one title. In addition to mom, wife, amazing woman, friend, sister, like you have a lot going on, many titles, many hats. Welcome to the Leaf Style Show today.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so impressed with the range of guests and topics you've been able to cover as I got caught up on all the content you've created and guests you've had. So it's really impressive. Lots of really important messages being put out there.
Thank you. We appreciate that. And we're very happy that you were able to sit down with us. So let's get right into it. When did your relationship with cannabis begin?
Well, I was born and raised in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And in high school, I really actually didn't consume that much until I started working at a particular summer camp where my friends there were more advanced in cannabis. And that was where I had my first experiences. They were all very positive. Very nature-based, outdoors is like really where I like identified the right place and space to consume. And you know, throughout college and in my 20s, I used cannabis fairly often. I was definitely someone that you knew had it somewhere or could get it. But yeah, it wasn't. And then I went on to pursue a social work career, and I have a master's degree in social work. So I really didn't have any experience at all in growing cannabis or working in the business of cannabis until I started my first business.
Got it. Got it. So let's talk about this incredible name, Jane West. How did that come about? I love it.
Thank you. Well, you know, I really felt like I wanted to recreate myself in this new venture. But really the truth in the inception of the name was that I started my first cannabis business in 2013, and it was Edible Events Company. And the goal was to create cannabis friendly events in Denver, Colorado. And that was at the dawn of adult use legalization. So like the 23 stores in Colorado dispensaries that were going to open on January 1st, 2014. I mean, people were still talking very, you know, concerned and with authority that like the feds are going to come shut this all down day one, you know, like there was a lot of risk involved. And additionally at the time, you know, I really loved my corporate job that I'd been at for 8 years. And so part of it was also just like creating this whole new identity in a business and professional sense. So I had to buy a laptop, I bought a burner phone, and I just kept, I needed a new name to use for everything. But no, it actually took a really long time to come up with. Like the entire month of November, 2013, which I joined Facebook as Jane West in November of 2013. I wanted something simple. I wanted something with two syllables. I really liked the fact that Jane West each had four letters and could fit into a little square. But also it's a nod to some of the women that I have been inspired by. Mae West, I wrote a big paper on her in college, and she now is just, people think of her as like a blonde bombshell, but she was really quite an innovator at her time. She was an investor. She wrote all her own plays. She really like pushed the limits on women's rights at the time, in my opinion. She had a boyfriend who was black, and they wouldn't let him into her apartment. And so she bought the building and he lived there in the penthouse. And there's just a lot of things about her that I really appreciated. And her board name was Mary Jane West. And I felt like it was a sign, like, because she definitely paved her own way. And so, yeah, I just wanted to do something new and have a fresh, clean start. And I feel like at the time, that's what I thought a lot of people would be able to do with the cannabis industry, because when I entered in Denver, Colorado, there was so much opportunity. And so it's an opportunity to recreate yourself in a nascent industry that is just getting started, that we all know we're on the right side of history. And so that was really like how it started. I had bought a laptop and a burner phone, and I needed to enter in a different name.
I love that. Tell us about that crossroads when your boss saw that documentary on CNBC and saw that your company was featured, Edible Events, and asked you to choose between your corporate life and your entrepreneurial position.
Yes. Well, I didn't really have much of a choice. I definitely did not think I would be asked to leave my position as swiftly as it had occurred. Like, I'd been there for a very long time. Additionally, the shot in the video, I was putting a pack to my mouth to show someone how it's used. Like, the journalist literally had no idea how it even works. So I was like, no, you just put your mouth to it. That's all I did. and I did not inhale or exhale on film because I intentionally on purpose, but they used that little clip. So I was asked to resign from my job the very next day after that special aired. And so that was, I created the name Jane West in October. I started all the social media accounts in November. I had my first event in January, 2.5 hour event, like went off without a hitch. And in February was when that footage aired and I was fired. So it was very sudden and definitely not like what I was expecting at the time.
And this is 2014. Denver went adult in 2014.
Yes. Denver at the time, I mean, what we were doing, I realized things have changed so dramatically in good ways and bad ways, but like it was just us and Washington State. And Washington State had, a long list of issues of why it didn't become the free market cannabis that is Colorado is. And so we really were the ones like opening stores every single week. Open Vape was based here and big brands started basing themselves here right away.
So you see what's going on. Denver is going adult use. You want to get your foot in and you start with these events. Talk us to what these early events look like, what was the goal, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, the number one goal was really just to be able to consume cannabis at an event on a weekend night with like normal, which absolutely should right now be happening and still is not happening in this state and in most states. I wanted my husband doesn't really consume, and I wanted to be able to go out and have him have a beer and have me be able to openly consume cannabis shame-free and go to an awesome event and that also supported local business. And so my first events were, and I have spent most of my career producing events for nonprofits, like awareness raising events, educational events. I produced an event over Obama's inauguration where we rented museums on the National Mall. And so like I'm used to large scale events. So for me, this was like so fun to do. Like every event had a theme. I was able to bring together these great chefs. So every single event was at a private art gallery. There's art everywhere. There's live music and also some thematic food. It was more like small bites, but things that really packed a punch with like flavor and tastes and a certain feel. They all had a theme. And I had a small staff, and it was called Edible Events. I did think that eventually I would have the right to have adults consume cannabis. So like they're all trying the same edible. But at the time, obviously it was not a consumption event. I was not distributing cannabis. It was called BYOC, which is still being used. I was definitely the first person to use that for cannabis. At the time, the other two trademarks were BYO Coffee and BYO Chair. I don't know, but I was the first BYO cannabis. And so we would, according to the laws of Colorado and Denver, we would rent a shuttle bus, which is a private for hire vehicle. You're allowed to consume smoke and do what you see fit. And so, we would turn this shuttle bus into like an old train car look and feel. And so in order to meet all the regulations, I even had like insurance from Lloyd's of London at the time to make sure everything was covered. So everyone would go outside on the bus if they wanted to consume and come inside for the art, and my husband could have a beer. And yeah, and it really, I mean, I lost my position. And for the first month in March, I was very hopeful. I was hopeful about so many things back then. But I was also really naive. And so I formed a partnership with the Colorado Symphony Orchestra. And they had just gotten a brand new Beethoven and Bruce series where they were getting all these new audience members. People who had never gone to see the symphony before, but it was because it was a beer-based event. And their CEO is a pretty cool guy and was like, yeah, let's do this. And so we had turned our summer events into fundraisers for the Colorado Symphony Orchestra and even had a concert at Red Rocks called On a High Note that was covered by Nightline. And there were 5,000 people and the entire symphony orchestra played. And so there's all these so many great things to look forward to. But the mayor of Denver, Michael Hancock, has always been very anti-cannabis, despite all of the great things it has brought to our community. And he sent a SWAT team to one of my events, and that was the end of it. It was at a small bakery event that was happening in between the symphony events, and it was at a a beautiful Sunday morning on Easter Sunday, and in a private bakery with 75 people. People were painting pots so they could go plant their own pots at home. And yeah, and a like 8-person SWAT team came, and they gave me criminal charges. And I ended up with misdemeanor charges with the city, and so was on probation, and I was not allowed to be anywhere close to a cannabis event.
Speak to the 5 times that you've been a defendant in cannabis cases. Since you wrote that, but speak to those times. That was like five.
Well, the 5 times. So that was probably from an article that you read. That the 5 times was for this case because they took evidence and video, and like he wanted to make sure there was no way that I would not be put on probation and not be allowed to do anything for at least a year. And so I had to keep going back trying to fight it so I wouldn't end up with misdemeanor charges. But and ultimately in the end, like it just had to happen. So, and then additionally, they went after, I mean, this is what it's about. Like it's about at its core, so much of the issues we face with marijuana are simply about the enforcement of laws. What are they enforcing and what are they not enforcing? And they decided to, you know, enforce some of these standards far more than they would for anyone else to ensure that everyone knew you shouldn't touch this again. Like they went after the bakery owner, they went after the security company, they went after everyone involved with the event. And so it really, you know, put an end to all the opportunity. I mean, I hired 4 different local companies to host every single event. And brought out, you know, 125 people from our community together to consume cannabis. And, you know, this is what they wanted to make sure no one could ever do.
So why didn't you stop? Why didn't you go and this isn't for me? What made you keep going?
Well, I pivoted. You know, first of all, I do believe that we are on the right side of history. And I absolutely, you know, I was here watching that first domino fall, and there were so many individuals, prohibitionists, people who are misinformed, people who are uneducated, who were making pretty wild, like, how will we know? The roads will be terrible and all the high schoolers are going to do it and the whole state's going to be, you know, and we know now from the public health data that has been closely, you know, obtained here in Colorado that those myths that are believable until you try to legalize cannabis just aren't true.
Right.
You know, overall illicit drug use with teens is down. The roads are just as safe as they were before. But also opiate use is down and deaths from, you know, there's so many other categories that we're seeing positive public health effects, including home prices that are near dispensaries. Like on every level, it's been, you know, something that has been supportive of Denver and of Colorado. And so, you know, we've learned a lot, but I believe I was on the right side of history and I knew I was doing the right thing. And I felt like I was joining a revolution as much as I was starting a business. I went and leaned back on my social work and community organizing roots and I founded Women Grow. So, you know, they told me I couldn't have consumption events. And so the purpose of Women Grow was to connect women on a professional level in their local communities with other women who are interested in starting cannabis businesses. And so it was clear that like maybe there'd be ancillary events other people can do that are consumption friendly that I can't go to, but I can start at least holding networking events and getting more people, because I was on the cover, you know, the symphony event was on the cover of a New York Times fine arts section. And, you know, I was on the cover of the Denver Post three times that year because of what it had happened to me. And so I had really put my face and name out there, and women from all over the world, Guam, Germany, France, every state, were like, how do I do what you do? And I want to work for you and I want to do what you're doing. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm a criminal. Like, I've never grown a weed plant in my life. And, but I think I can help you help yourself. I think I can help you get organized in a way that hopefully you can affect your local regulations to ensure that you get to actually own a cannabis business in your city, in your town, to serve your community.
And let me say, as one of the guests of Women Grow being interviewed by Gia recently, it's an amazing platform. It has connected so many women in the cannabis industry worldwide, just mm-hmm. demonstrating different politics, different roadblocks, various issues that we all have, and we're able to have yep. a general platform for us to all share. So it is a super awesome platform, and very excited Thank that you. You have it and we're able to advertise and publicize at womengrow.com. It's a really supportive platform yes. for all of us, and there's so few women in the industry, so it's
yes.
nice
to have it's a worse than ever
network and system for all of us to really camaraderie and kind of get to talk about the issues that we feel independently.
Yes, I could. I mean, I'm glad it's out there. I think that the opportunities are less, and you know, for a lot of women, getting into the sector is harder than it ever was. So I think it's as important now, even more. I think it's more important now that women are coming together at the early stages in these states and talking about what's happening, because I've seen how it's evolved, and it's something that is concerning, and we have to fight. There has to be another wave of activism behind this before entrepreneurialism, because there's just not enough opportunity, and it doesn't have to be that way.
Absolutely. So it sounds like the goal in sort of starting Women Grow then and today, it seems to be the same, right? To expand the
definitely
space for women
yeah.
and to share resources, educate, and hopefully impact this industry in a positive way. And we have to give a shout out to the mayor, because it seems like there may not be any Women Grow without the mayor and the SWAT team.
Oh, yeah. I know he's starting to like flip now in interviews and kind of say nice things about the cannabis industry, but it's still... No. I got him. I got his card. Oh, no.
Yeah. So one of these questions, and it sounds like you may have given the answer here, because one of the questions we want to ask you is how, you know, you're doing events, you're doing something that you want to see, you want to be a part of, you want to be able to consume with close ones, have a good time. When did that sort of turn into, okay, there's something here, I'm going to be intentional? Was it the Women Grow mm-hmm. pivot? Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I figured out pretty early on that I was not best suited to be necessarily the CEO of Women Grow. And in fact, I never was the CEO of Women Grow. You know, I didn't see myself at that time as being that I could manage a company in that manner. I was the national events director. I founded the company and built up the whole team around me. But I knew it wasn't exactly the right fit for me, for a lot of reasons, but also like I have very strong opinions and I'm, you know, not going to hold back on those, because I think, you know, the conversation here is important, more important than it's ever been. And, Women Grow is for everyone. Women Grow has to be welcoming and wonderful for everyone. And so maybe I wasn't the best person leading it, since I do, you know, I do have a lot of ways I want to help shape the industry, and they might not agree with what everyone thinks. But additionally, you know, Women Grow was something that was able to serve as a springboard for almost everyone that ever worked there and was part of it. And so I wanted to just have as many springboards as possible. So I built it the first year and then spent the second year hiring up the next generation of staff. And then I worked to just learn how you even like form an entity. I mean, made it all up. I created all the logos and the names and the trademarks and everything on my own. But like, how do I actually turn that into something that I can have the next generation own part of and be part of and know confidently that they're in this for them. And so, so that took longer than I thought. That took a whole nother year. So by the end of year two, after my very first Women Grow networking event in Denver, Colorado, it was one of my last days there. And so, Women Grow is now 80% Black female owned. And, I love, you know, the team behind it. We definitely need more of everything is all I can say about that. Like people, there should be more groups fighting for more things. We need this next second wave of activism out there. I took 2 years to build it, but also was like watching and thinking about how I can really make my mark. I was still believing that social use would have happened by like 2018, 2019. And I wanted to create the products and the glassware that would be there at those events once I, you know, resurrected Edible Events Company. Because one of the biggest issues I had in planning my events is that I couldn't like find a bong that like looks like this, that you would like want to smoke out of and you would like serve different things. And so I set out to, you know, create my own brand, design my own products and, show the women that have been, you know, watching me for so long. And really, you know, Women Grow's audience has always been like 30 to 40% men too. It's the people interested in getting into the cannabis sector and also people who are not, you know, who are facing adversity and getting their licensing and getting their businesses off the ground. And that's women. And so, it's been a very interesting journey and every step of the way, there's been challenges and I just try to choose my path based on how I can make the most impact, how I can work the smartest, but also how I can show people another way. Cause I am told over and over again, whether it was starting Women Grow, when I was starting Women Grow, so many of the guys in charge of things, the reason to name names, were like, we don't need a women's group. We don't need fractions. We don't need, you know, we don't need that, you know? And I was like, well, of course you don't need it. Everybody else here looks like you. So you guys seem to be doing fine, you know? So, I want to show people that they can do this. And so when I set out to start raising money to create my first line of products, I was told I had to go to all VCs and I had to sell out to these firms and I don't know anything and I don't have an MBA and I'm going to need so much help from them. I'll have to give away so much of my company and so much equity. And, you know, I just knew I could do it, but I also knew that if I didn't do it, then I wouldn't be actually creating a ladder. I wouldn't actually be showing other individuals who don't have access to capital. Like I don't have access to capital, how you could actually go out and do this on your own.
So to piggyback on that, because you raised
I did.
No access to capital. How did you
do it? No, none. The first, you know, like my initial helpers were like, what, you're going to have a friends and family round. Like, well, what's that? Well, that's where you call up the people you know who have both who write you checks. And I was like, okay, so what's option B? Option B is touring with all the VCs who don't get you and don't even understand what you're trying to do and probably try to buy Women Grow, won't even know what to do with that. So basically I knew I needed to raise $1.2 million. I refused to have my company majority white male owned, which is basically 99% of licensed cannabis businesses in this country are 100% owned by generationally wealthy Caucasian men. I want to do something different. And so, I turned to equity crowdfunding and trying to find the right VCs, but it took a really long time. Like it took me 2.5 years to raise the first 900K. But my company is, majority owned by people of color and women, and they're supporters of what I'm building. And I mentor people all the time on raising funds. And my number one piece of advice is like, you are interviewing them as much as they are interviewing you. And they are getting the opportunity to invest in your company. And like you need to go into those meetings with as many questions for them as they have for you. because like you can show them your P&L and your ideas, but what really matters is like, who are these individuals you're bringing into your network? And that's really what matters. You had asked me about intention, and like every single choice matters. Who makes my stickers matters? Who makes my packaging matters? You know, my investors matter. Every write down, like, and that's like just has been my path. And so I was able to find the right individuals. I'm super proud. I found 23 different investors to be able to close my round. And then additionally, I started using equity crowdfunding. It was very, very new at the time. I was the first cannabis company to do it, in my understanding. And I had to do a lot of things with the federal government as a nod to Mae West, who's like the FCC, the guys that used to cut up movies. You know, and like they would censor all of her movies and cut them up. And so I've had to fight a lot of battles with the federal government over my ability to just raise funds. But if I didn't show individuals how to run a successful equity crowdfunding round, then, you know, I wasn't actually paving the way, because using equity crowdfunding or using SAFE agreements or some of these other options for fundraising is something that people who are starting businesses, people who are starting brands who don't have licenses yet because of unfair systems in place, like it's a very good option, because you're able to talk about your brand, talk about what you're building, talk about your product, and have not only your audience read about it, but also your new investors. You're building a brand in a different way. And so I'm a big fan of equity crowdfunding, and in doing three different rounds, I have raised $750,000 from 3,500 people in 42 countries and every single US state and territory. And that's a way to build your brand also.
I love that. So let me summarize that. So first round was friends and family. Second round.
First round was people I didn't know before I was introduced to them who believed in me and the brand. Yes.
So angel investors are first round.
Yes. Yes.
Those people who believe in you, who want to see the brand come to fruition.
Yes.
Grouped in there, family and friends who are able to financially help and support you.
They all invested. The best part around was that my friends and family were able to invest using equity crowdfunding, because you could invest for as little as $25.
Perfect. Yep. Private investing and then eventually equity crowdfunding. Absolutely. I love that sequence. And that's what our viewers want to understand. Like, where do I even start? And how do I build to equity crowdfunding? Yes. How do I secure and finalize my details so that people will believe in me? So watching that progression, you know, really helps people to have an outline and understand that you don't have to go get SBA loans. You don't have to use your entire skills. You know, you also need to leverage what you're doing and believe in your product and believe in your brand and help others, convince others of what's important and how you're going to make changes and waves.
You're absolutely right. I want to give a little free game also. So now, like a dozen different companies have tried utilizing equity crowdfunding. And because it must be tightly regulated by the federal government through SEC and FINRA, you have to complete a Form C and other documents that explain a lot of details about your business and what you're doing and how. And those are public documents. And so for anyone interested in equity crowdfunding, but also just interested in like the true inner workings when it comes to revenue models of cannabis businesses, you can go look at the Form Cs of every single cannabis brand that has used equity crowdfunding and read every single thing about their numbers, their P&L, their staff, their ownership structure. And it's a really good way to get a deep dive into some of these companies and start to think about how you would frame your revenue model.
That's a lot of game. That's a good one. The Form C, public information.
Form C. Yes. We need more of it. We need way more public information around here.
And just to tag on that, I thought it was very interesting the way you say you not only as a way to obviously get capital, but it is a way to speak to your audience and build your community and your potential customer base at the same time. So it's a win-win.
Yes, it is.
So talk to us a little bit about MJ BizCon. You're out there in Vegas. Tell us about that.
Weed Week. Highlight.
How was it?
I like to call it Weed Week because I've never, you know, MJ BizCon is a for-profit media company, and how you get on those panels doesn't have that much to do with your own expertise. And so I do want to be clear that, like, I'd like to refer to it as Weed Week, and I encourage everyone else to do the same. I hope to see, it was great. It was great being out there, and it was great seeing people again because, okay, so I got in trouble in Colorado with the event, but it's Nevada. What are they going to do? So in 2014, we held by far the biggest consumption event in cannabis, at the very, first cannabis conference that happened there, and then held it again in 2015, and then held it again in 2016. And it was great because right now the biggest issue with these conferences is there's no cannabis consumption. And if they're, you know, the parties are getting shut down and people are getting in trouble, and you know, in Nevada, there's a lot of really cool things happening. It's why I'm so excited for that market. But yeah, so, you know, we have a long history of throwing big events in Nevada, consumption events, and we revisited our same venue and our same site that we held all the other events in. And it was great just being like, especially after 2 years of not having contact, and then how much so many people's businesses and partnerships and product lines have grown over the past 2 years, to be able to like reconvene and come together. It was really awesome. And it's a great way to see everyone from across the nation. Cause you know, like Women Grow has been in like over 50 different cities by now. And so, you know, everyone descending upon this one location is really awesome. Also, I have new partners there, Cannavative. They're a natively owned company in Nevada. Our grows up in Reno. And so we were launching one of my new products. And so that was great because we were able to, you know, really push that and meet our partners and meet our team and meet the people that are tabling for us there across Nevada. They're in over 70 store shelves. So it was great. It's nice to see this next generation coming into the sector. I am concerned though about like the language we're using and how limiting the current market is when it comes to opportunity, and how it kind of feels like people are just accepting that. Like they're like, well, what did we think was going to happen? But it's time to like fight for access and fight for more licensing. And I wish I would have seen more conversations like that happening at this conference. I feel like if more people were talking and demanding about access to licensing to be able to grow this plant in your community for your neighbors, like, or even just home grow, it would let me know. I think if more people fought for it, there'd be more opportunities in 5 years from now, than, you know, people trying to go play the game that exists right now, because that game board is not fair and there's not enough squares on it. So
you touched on something that I think one of our founding beliefs is this industry is still new enough where you can impact it, especially if you build community. You can impact it in a way that you would like to see and your community would like to see. And you're right. You don't have to give in. It's too early to say this is how it needs to be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, so I try to find my hope in proving models where other people can succeed, you know, and so like there's initiatives going in place in Vermont where like if at this point, if you live in Illinois and you want to start a cannabis business, I would say piece of advice number one, move to Vermont. like people might have to completely relocate based on state regulations in order to get opportunities to start their brand. But yeah, no, one of the things that I believed when I started Women Grow, more than it's still true, is that the industry will never be this small again. And that's still true because we know, you know, how like, you know, the aging population is using cannabis more than ever, and all new demographics are starting to incorporate into their lives, and stigmas are being reduced. And the next generation, like the next generation has such a different mindset about cannabis than the, you know, generation, than our old, than people over the age of 60 right now. And so to have that generation coming up with like such a different approach to drugs and the criminalizing of drug use, those things give me hope. There's going to be a lot of changes. Having people connect early on is important. And getting your brand started right now is important. This is just getting started. And quite honestly, the way it's unfolding, one thing I missed to say earlier was just that, I started my business in Colorado, and Colorado is pretty close to unlimited licensing. Like this application system where someone is deciding whether you get it or not, that you fill out an application and you go take it into the med, and if something's not quite right on it, they'll tell you to fix it, but then you take it back and then you fix it and then you get your license. And so like there's thousands of cultivators in the state of Colorado, and there's hundreds of dispensaries, and there's also couriers and transporters and manufacturers and packaging, like they're all up and down the supply chain. It's been like a small business revolution. And I was naive enough to think that that's how it's going to be everywhere. I mean, there's many people live in Colorado that live in Los Angeles, the city of Los Angeles. So, oh my gosh, if that's the multiplier, this is going to be amazing. I just never thought about how much opportunity would be stolen and how much the sector would change to have so few people in charge of cultivation in so many states. So that's just why, like, my mindset is always, disheartened, because that first 2014, 2015, before I even heard what an MSO was, it wasn't a word. That wasn't a word 5 years ago. Like, I remember hearing when, like, I was in Illinois and I was at this meeting and someone was like, did you hear they're going to issue, 20 licenses. And I was like, 20 licenses for the city of Chicago? That's not enough. They need like 200. And they're like, no, for the whole state.
Right.
And I was like, wait, what? I couldn't even like process it. And then my first question was, how are they going to pick? How are they going to pick who gets the 20? And then all I've seen for the 5 years since that moment happened was, oh, this is how they pick.
The barriers. Ridiculous, honestly. Being in Florida, being in a medical state, we've seen it firsthand. There's still black farmer's license that's being held up for over 5 years. We just reached over 600 active patients that are registered as medical marijuana users, 600,000 active patients that are registered medical marijuana users in the state of Florida, which now allows for additional licensing, so hopefully another 20 will be allocated for the state, but we're talking about the entire state. So each license allows 25 dispensaries under the license. So hopefully more access, and that just really is a system, because the card is $75 in the state of Florida.
And you've got to get it all the time.
For veterans, you have to get it every year. So it's a money-making, profitable business that's been shut out for many small business owners and entrepreneurs and people who want to break in. So it's been very disheartening. I agree with you.
It's so disheartening, initially, because it's a plant. I didn't know. Yeah. You guys know that it is a plant that if you like planted it outdoors in the right places, like Florida, it would grow like on its own in the sun.
Like you don't
it's
have to do anything.
Amazing. It's amazing. So, there's so many things it needs. And that's what I mean. Like the mindset, like people are like, oh, I'm going for a micro license. Oh, great. A breadcrumb. You're going for a license for a breadcrumb.
Right.
That, the revenue models of these other companies would show you if you're selling all that weed at wholesale pricing, you're never going to have a good business. So, we have to change language now. We have to demand more now, today.
Let's talk about that. And you're saying changing the language. And where do you see the opportunities? You've been involved in this industry a long time. Where do you really see some of the sweet spots in this industry right now? I know you said Vermont.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm a little bit of a futurist too. And also these are just all my own opinions from what I see happening. But like, yes, Vermont has passed legislation that is every single grow is 5 to 10 1,000 square feet, like that's what you go for. But there's no pre-requirements for opening, getting your own license. It's going to be like a very open market. And so like, it's just a place where you should go look and at the very least, look at how they're doing it and go to your representatives and say, why can't it be like this here? Why don't I have this opportunity as well? And so another place is South Dakota. There's less than 1 million people in both of these states, both in Vermont and South Dakota have less than 1 million people. But South Dakota also, and I think that actually, and also, you know, Colorado is not a very well big populated state. And I think that actually speaks to how they were able to pass legislation that really helped the people of the state, because it's a small place and everybody had to see the table and they're like, no, you're not going to get away with us. You know, and in other places, there's just so many layers of bureaucracy. Everybody gets a little piece and it's all gone. But no, so South Dakota made a great laws where they made sure that every single, Melissa Mentil, she's been fighting there for almost a decade now. They made sure every single county would have a dispensary, because if we're legalizing this, everyone should have access. They better all have one. You know, there's places like Alaska, which again, really far away, but like you have opportunity there and you could open a cannabis business there and you could start a brand there. And other states will, as they start legalizing, hopefully we will see more opportunity out there or more opportunity in certain licenses. So that's when it comes to license. That answer is based on if you want to start a licensed cannabis business to sell commercially a THC-based product. Now, there's a lot of other things you can do in the cannabis industry, you know, and so like all those businesses are going to need support. And so whether it's HR, accounting, or, you know, financial services, those are all different ways and that you could flip a business. My company is an accounting firm. She's run an accounting firm for 10 years and she thinks that, you know, the cannabis companies should have the same services. And so, but you know, dedicating yourself to learning the nuances of the cannabis sector, the terminology, the words, the extractions, how you turn the flower into this and now it's worth something else, but it goes out the door as a different thing. You know, if you're running a real business, you need tight people that are really learning this as it goes, because we're making it up as it goes. So, you know, there's a lot of opportunity there for people who are running, whether it's legal businesses or whatnot, that are flipping their services, their professional services, to tend to the cannabis industry and learn the language of the cannabis industry. And you know, I see a lot of opportunity in the home grow industry. I believe, this is just my opinion, but like, I think the current powers that be, the control they have over with lobbyists, the control they have at these state capitals, unquestionably, I'm not being a conspiracy theorist. You can go see how many different lobbying companies each one of the MSOs has. It's really taken home grow and our right to grow a couple of these plants on our private property just out of the conversation. Like it's been so removed, and it's led to people kind of thinking that home grow is like not business. And I was called out on that recently, and I was like, well, I think we're not talking about the opportunities in home grow. And they're like, opportunities in home grow? Then they're just growing it themselves. Well, yeah, you're right. And they also need all of the equipment, all of the materials, all of the items. Additionally, when you take a close look at how this could evolve, like if I have a right to six to nine plants here in the state of Colorado, and there's a business model where I have my own grower who's tending to my plants, my legally allocated plants. Like there's so many different opportunities to support home grow and to support people's rights to plant, to grow this plant on their own, from the materials they need to do it, to just like networking among your network, to spreading all the genetics and all the seeds that they need. I mean, the entire European cannabis industry brands are all based on seeds. And that's how brands get their leads. So like, what if instead we all are talking about seeds and phenotypes and selling that? You know, we have to look out, like I said before, like the game board is not built for us to win. So we need to make new game boards that where we are able to like create our own opportunity. And there's a lot for it. You know, so we have home grow here in Colorado. I do not have a plant and I've never successfully grown a plant. And it is not, you know, I've tried, but I have two kids. And but one of my neighbors did. So this year I did kind of walk one of my neighbors through, you know, some of the things I had known and got them connected. And they decided to just put a clone in their garden in the spring right next to their tomato plant. They're allowed to, it's legal. And he gave out 10 of these. 10. One plant he grew in his yard, and he created 10 jars like this, 22 ounces. That is a year's worth of cannabis for someone that's a half an ounce a week, you know? And so, like, I don't think people even understand what's being taken from one. This will grow readily in their backyard. And I smoked it, and it's really good. I love sun grown. I feel like you can really tell a difference with, like, when the full spectrum of the sun is actually growing your plant. So my answer to your question, although long-winded, is I think there's a lot of opportunity for home grow, but we need to mobilize people to fight for right for home grow so that there's that market there.
I want to see you on a panel talking to millennials and graduating seniors in college who are looking for ways to get into the industry, because you've yep. had at least 6 different opportunities outside of needing a THC license that people right, forget. Right. You know, it is still a business. It's still an industry. It needs publicity. It needs landscapers to help with your grow. Like, it needs mm-hmm. so many different entities, banking, finances, tech, like, so many different yep. ways to promote, bring yes. in, use your current tools that you have and your current skill set to magnify and get into the industry and really twerk your skills so that other people can yes. take advantage of you, you know, and really kind of
yes.
say, hey, let me use you as a consultant. How can I hire you for this? How do we get on this panel? How do we draw a team together? You know, you've named at least 6 awesome different fields that people don't even remember about or think about right. it, and they're just so focused on getting a THC license, and that's not the right. only way to break in.
Right. And if we get lucky, we'll have some people on our side, whatever that is, because there's definitely sides that are forming here, who create something that takes more control of the conversation. So, like, during the pandemic, you know, I saw Clubhouse spring up, this new kind of app, and the types of communities that instantly formed when people didn't have to have their video and they all had different handles, you know, it was amazing to see how quickly conversations were started or something was changed or was something new. So, like, what we're talking about is manipulating things that already exist. And I'm excited for that next generation as much as you are, because I'm excited to see what they come up with that I haven't even thought of yet. But they need to know that they have the ability to change the future. Like, instead of just, you know, trying to go to a job board.
Absolutely. And they just have a different perspective to bring to the table, just with, you know, some guidance maybe, right? Just a little additional guidance.
Yes. No, you're totally right. They do need that.
Let's talk about what's next for Jane West. And you talked a lot about your crowdfunding, these products that you're now bringing to market. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Okay, so I'm trying my best to make the decisions that I would want a cannabis company that I would want to buy cannabis from would make, while also running a revenue generating business that's cash flow positive and that I can control, you know, my vendors and access to products. So first and foremost, I am finding partners in every state and across the world that meet my culture and ethos, that are truly diversely owned companies, or at the very least are companies, if they are white owned, at least they are doing something different or are leveraging their licensing and their opportunity that was given to them to actually do something different. And you can find the right people out there that truly do understand that they are in an advantageous position and want to actually help. And so we have partners in 15 states and 5 provinces of Canada that grow flower. And then we divide the flower into day and night, because it's like sativa and indica. And then they turn that product into mini joints, and they also fill different types that we sell. And so I supply them with everything they need, and they're officially, you know, my licensees. And that way, you know, I love all flowers. So if, you know, I like going to the store and coming out with a bunch of different types. And so through the day and night delineation, Our partner is able to put all different flower inside of the products, and you're able to go and get your night or a new day and go. And I like to like change it up a couple times a year. Our pipes are these single serving pipes. They're made in the United States. They're recyclable. They're reusable. They support the sale of other flower. The tubes we use to put them in are biodegradable. They're American made from a female owned business. That we worked to figure out just the perfect tube size so we weren't wasting space. But I love these. It's a perfect little chillum. It helps support, you know, your flower consumption. It has a little cap on it. It has a little carb at the base if you watch. It fills up with smoke. Oh, nice. You can really taste it.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so these are single serving pipes and I love them. And also, you know, previously we had sold everything in the forms of mini joints, tiny little joints that are like a perfect serving. They're pure bud. There's no shake or trim. But one of the things I love about the pipes too, is you can see the flower inside. And so you can see the bud, which you don't really get to do, you know, with a pre-roll and whatnot. So yeah, we serve cannabis in single serving with through all of our partners nationwide, and they all carry the similar products. And yeah, I'm trying my best to show that like you can select your partners and you can leverage your brand to support that. I'd like to see more of it out here, but hopefully we're just like paving the way and more people will come. But it's a good network. And additionally, we have other products coming to market. A lot of issues in cannabis are related to different equipment that just, you know, it's not made in America, whether that's a big pen or a bong, or, and, you know, these other devices in general that were considered paraphernalia. They're certainly not American factories making them. So because of the illegal nature of it, but on top of like all the issues else going on in manufacturing in the world. So I'm trying my best to have stateside manufacturers, but where that's not possible, you know, I just have to be able to compete. And so in places that I can't do that, then, you know, I want to make sure I'm making high quality products for customers. I have a new, my old glass line is pretty expensive because it really was. It's like hand finished and it's all these different custom tubing. But my new line that we should start seeing next year is going to be more accessible price point, kind of fitting that like more like a rock glass, something around your home that you would bring out for guests. This is the beginning of the 20s collection, and that's what I'll be doing in glass for the rest of the year.
And is that all under Jane West brand? All these products?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah. Great. All right.
Website janewest.com.
Yes.
So Jane, this season is all focused on Free the Culture. What does Free the Culture mean to you?
Oh my goodness. Free market cannabis. That's what that means. You know, it's all about getting high quality product to the customer in a way that benefits their life and makes their life better. And the systems that are in place right now are prohibiting that from happening. We know what cannabis can do for people. And every day there are hundreds of more people who are learning that they were wrong, who are learning that it's something that can help them, who are learning, you know, that cannabis is something that could integrally change their lives. And we need to get them access to that product while also supporting local business, because it is a plant that, honestly, the biggest secret is it's not that hard to grow. What's hard is trying to work with this system, and whether it's, you know, administrative racism. I mean, basically is what I keep seeing over and over again, but like there's a system in place, and that's what makes it hard to start a cannabis business, not actually growing the plant. And so we have to keep talking about that until it's possible for citizens of every state to go get a cannabis business license and start one if they choose to do so. And so that's what Free the Plant is about. Free market cannabis, local cannabis, independently owned cannabis companies. Like, you're growing something for your, it's the consumable, it's a cash crop. Jim Cramer from Bad Money saying it. You know, it's something that it should really create not only a small business revolution, but an agricultural revolution. Once you start to really talk about covering this country with the hemp that covered it 100 years ago. So, We just have to make sure that it's something that business owners in, from every state can actually have a play a part in.
We love that. I really want to highlight two important things that I think you're an amazing leader. Most importantly, when you mentioned knowing your limitations, knowing what you're good at, knowing where you can succeed, and then also being able to delegate. I thought that was really beautiful how you highlighted Women Grow and knew that, okay, this is something I can start, but I need help in building. So you built a team to really be able to amplify that brand and make sure that it's accessible to everyone. And then the second thing I thought was really cool is how you intentionally employ minority and women, and that's the majority of your vendors, the majority of your licensees, and people that you choose to really work with and build partnerships with. So I just want to commend you for those two important things that are a really great interview, great takeaways overall, but I really enjoy that aspect of you and I hadn't known that. So I'm just proud to be sitting here with you and learning from you and, you know, really
thank you.
Taking advantage of this opportunity. I thought you were super poignant on those things. And I love how you're very intentional on your decision-making and your activism.
Well, thank you so much. And I'm so glad you are out there too. And that we've all, you know, been connected earlier this year because like every, what you guys have put out is, it all resonates with me. And I just, this is what it's about. Like putting out the right conversations and giving people the right conversation to have because these are new conversations in a new world. So like, let's like shape it, you know? So thank you guys so much.
Thank you. Great. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And this is Leaf Style.
Yay.
No longer a subculture, a Leaf Style. Thank you. Thank you.